from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
With the 2016 presidential campaign only a few weeks away from Election Day, Catholics are called to form their consciences and discern very carefully the issues and the candidates. In a time when our country is facing the dangers of the culture of death, it is time to discern our vote as Catholics with an authentic Catholic moral vision. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register blogger Monsignor Charles Pope and his recent commentaries on recapturing a sense of voting as Catholics with a clear-eyed understanding of where we stand in an increasingly secular age. And then I'm joined by Register writer Tom Hoops to discuss the many challenges faced by the media in covering Pope Francis. Welcome again to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, a senior editor for the National Catholic Register, senior contributor for EWTN, and co-host of Register Radio. I'm filling in as host for Register Editor-in-Chief Jeanette DeMello, who is away on maternity leave. Mother and baby are doing just fine, by the way. Thank you for all of your prayers. And thank you also for joining me today. One of the Register's most popular, not to mention blunt, bloggers and writers, Monsignor Charles Pope, has been writing for some time that Catholics need to recapture a proper sense of sin, a deeper awareness of the crisis we face today because of abortion, euthanasia, and the collapse of marriage and family life. In a recent post, he called on Catholics to be Catholic, vote as a Catholic with a Catholic moral vision, and advance the kingdom of God. Monsignor Pope is currently a pastor in the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., where he served on the Priest Council, the College of Consultors, and the Priest Personnel Board. Along with publishing a daily blog at the Archdiocese of Washington, as well as writing for us, of course, at the Register, he's written in pastoral journals and conducted numerous retreats for priests and lay faithful, as well as weekly Bible studies in the U.S. Congress and the White House. Monsignor, thank you so much for joining me this week.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
It's always a pleasure to have you, especially in an election year, because this is the time when Catholics need to be discerning their votes. And you have been focused very heavily in recent weeks on Christian persecution, on what you call comfort Catholicism, and now with this intriguing piece on Catholics voting with an authentic Catholic moral vision. What's been prompting you to write these different posts?
Well, I think overall, I've been writing for about 8 years online, and I'm very concerned, I think we all ought to be and are, with the just decline of our culture and how that's not only affecting the culture, clearly, but it's affecting us inside the church. And here we come into yet another political season where I'm afraid most Catholics allow the politics to win the day rather than the moral issues. And Satan, I think, has deceived us that many of the most critical moral issues are just to be regarded as political issues. They cannot, and we have every obligation to be Catholics first before there's an R or a D or an independent or whatever there is. We've got to be Catholics and have a Catholic moral vision, and we're in trouble today because we haven't been doing that for 50 to 60 years, and it's going to be pretty hard to turn this aircraft carrier around, but we got to start nudging.
In the middle of a storm and under assault from various missiles coming from all directions,
yeah,
too. Well, you write, and I'm quoting, that Satan is no idiot. He has successfully convinced most Catholics that moral issues are political issues. How exactly did that happen?
Well, it's a sad thing, and as I say, Satan's very organized, and I think so are those of the world. Jesus once lamented, you know, how the children of this age are more savvy in dealing with their own than are the children of light. And over these years, what we've seen is that what we kind of call the non-negotiable issues, and I can describe that term in a moment, but in effect, things like abortion, euthanasia, embryonic stem cell research, and same-sex marriage, these issues have kind of parked in one party, whereas important but negotiable moral issues in the sense of the details have parked in another party. And this is a master move by Satan, and keeps us Catholics just hating each other and dividing out, because sadly, too many Catholics, in fact most, I would say, are more passionate about their political views than their faith. And it's a struggle for us on both sides of the aisle, you know. And so it's a sad reality. We're very hyped up with politics and the church. Yeah, you know, who knows about all that, you know, and we're pretty vague about our faith. So these are the master moves of the prince of this world, I think, to divide us.
Yeah, I have the impression that a lot of people are very well informed about the plight of the Kardashians in Paris and losing their jewelry more than they are really aware of the most pressing issues of our time.
Yeah, the culture is very imposing. Yeah, and maybe just a word about what I mean by non-negotiables and negotiables. You see, I think you're either for abortion or against it, same-sex marriage, you're for it or against it. But when it comes to other issues, like, for example, immigration, very important and a significant moral issue, wherein, you know, over and over in Scripture, the Lord tells us, you know, you've got to care for the immigrant, the stranger, the alien in your midst. You must be just to them. And yet, when it comes to the details, that doesn't mean all border security is to be abandoned, so there's legitimate discussions about how much and when and how, and likewise, we can't have all 7 billion people on the planet living in the country, so there are some legitimate concerns, not that we should care for the immigrant, but, you know, how best to do that in a way that keeps the common good, for, you know, available to all. And so you see what I mean by negotiable. It's not that the issue itself is to be set aside. But one might argue, another one, how best to care for the poor, an essential moral value. And yet how best? Big government, local, federal, state, more private initiatives. And this is where the debates can set up in the parties. But the basic issue is unfortunately, those negotiable issues are parked in one party and the non-negotiables in another. And that's what I mean by Satan being smart.
Well, have we also lost a sense of definition for the common good?
Yeah, that's certainly gone away. It's all about me and my private decisions, and people forget that private, even the most private decisions we make, ultimately have public consequences, and so we're in trouble there. And so all of these are ways of saying that I think the other thing is, in terms of weighing moral issues, Catholics are not always so good about that. So, well, I know he's all for abortion, but he's really good on the affordable housing issue over here. Well, all right, but 50 million dead children, and how do we compare that to, you know, again, an important issue, but one which involves a lot of finesse and staying at the table. And you see what I'm saying? It's the weighing of the moral issues that we're also quite, you know, poor at.
Yeah, and as a priest, of course, you have particular obligations that you have to be very careful in how you preach from the pulpit, but also the great demands of being that voice from the pulpit as well.
Yes, and I think priests are human beings, and we struggle. We don't like tension any more than anybody else does. And sadly, though, again, there's going to always be some Catholics and non-Catholics as well who say, oh, there he goes talking about politics again. You know, never mind, I'm talking about abortion. Or, you know, right now a big thing in this city is euthanasia. The city council in D.C. is voting to push that forward. And so, oh, there he goes, politics again, politics. And it's not these, again, this is what the devil has done. And we have to be able to speak, and I will just simply resist anybody who says, there he goes, Mr. Republican, or what have you again. I will resist that, and I will say, I am speaking as a Catholic about Catholic and moral issues for all of us.
Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the National Catholic Register and senior contributor for EWTN, talking with Monsignor Charles Pope about his recent blog post and calling us all to vote as Catholics with an authentic Catholic moral vision. Well, Monsignor, the question then that a lot of Catholics are likely to ask you is, well, what can I as a Catholic actually do? Where do you start?
Yeah. Well, as I say, first of all, I think we have to really reflect on our own life. Am I, first and foremost, a Catholic? Do I allow what I believe on key moral issues to be more influenced by the political party I belong to, or by the church and by the scriptures? Now, again, that's for all of us on these issues. I think that there's going to be a tendency for certain members of certain parties to be more sympathetic with certain key issues that are parked in that party, whether the care of the poor, immigration over here, or abortion, family life, and marriage issues over here. And the question is, especially as we get past a political season, how do I really inform myself and speak and act and talk more as a Catholic? So we got to start with ourselves, and then we have to begin to engage friends of ours who may or be in one party or another, or even if they're all in the same party that we're in. We have to kind of continue to push and say, well, all right, we're right on these issues, but we got to look a lot more at other issues. So for a member of the Democrat Party saying, this thing on abortion, this has got to change. And likewise, you know, I could give examples on the right, but, you know, we've got to be a little more savvy about this question of immigration and more biblically based. We can't just say, well, I'm a Republican. I don't like all that stuff. And so, again, I'm using caricatures a bit, but I think just to be brief. But these are, we have to begin to raise these and be part of the body politic with bringing our values, not just simply accepting the values that are proposed to us by parties or other ways we divide out.
Well, and as you note, it really does have to start with us. Mm-hmm. We have that obligation to make ourselves holier, to avail ourselves of the sacraments and everything else that the church offers before we can really go out and bring other people.
That's it. And again, it always comes back to catechesis, doesn't it? We know everything about the Kardashians, like you say, too often, and yet very, very little about what the Lord says in the catechism and in the Bible. We've got to get better with that. And I try to do a lot of that in my church and model it, but as you say, you know, priests feel sometimes intimidated, and we have to get over that. I think the younger clergy are a little better at this. I think the clergy my age and older had a kind of an unwritten rule: do no harm, say nothing offensive, no offend nobody, just make sure everybody has a nice experience and send them home. And I don't say that was literally taught, but it was kind of an assumption, and I think we've got to come out of that, and we've just got to engage. I've had people walk out on me as I say certain things. I understand that. I'm hoping they'll be back. And there's a longer conversation. It isn't all done in one moment. It's an ongoing conversation in our pulpits, in our catechesis, in our meetings, and so on.
Yeah, and it's building up that community and making Catholics feel comfortable and confident in their faith, too, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think there's also a... like you say, confident is, of course, beautiful, you know, that word in Latin, confide, with faith, mm-hmm. you know, and faith here understood as a courageous faith, not just a creedal faith where we recite certain things, but we're confident. We go out and we say, I've got something important to share. This is good news. God loves life, even in difficult situations. It's a summons to us to care for each other. This is good news, you know, rather than, people won't like me if I say this, and... So, as I say, to be very, very proud of our faith and encouraged to go out and announce it that way.
Well, people like you very much, especially your blog. So thank you so much for your contributions to the Register, and thank you so much for being a guest today.
Well, thank you.
Look forward to having you back.
All right.
Well, when we come back, I'm going to be talking with Tom Hoops, a Register writer, about the challenges of covering Pope Francis in the media today. You're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the National Catholic Register and senior contributor for EWTN. For anyone paying attention over the last few years, Pope Francis can be a bit of a challenge for Catholic media to cover and to write about. His intense pastoral style, his South American idiom, and his colorful press conferences, especially on planes, often test even the most seasoned Catholic journalist in how exactly to cover and report on this most unusual pontiff. To discuss some of the demands and also the opportunities in covering Francis, I'm joined by Tom Hoops. He is vice president of college relations at Benedictine College in Atchison, Kansas. He's a former reporter in the Washington, D.C. area. And, of course, he served for 10 years as executive editor of the National Catholic Register. He lives, of course, in Atchison, Kansas, with his wife and 9 children. Tom recently wrote a commentary entitled Catholic Journalists and Pope Francis. Tom, welcome to Register Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, you are rather well qualified to discuss Pope Francis, given not only your journalistic pedigree, but also your new book, What Pope Francis Really Said. Let's start with the most important question. Why is Pope Francis so hard to cover compared to John Paul II or Benedict XVI?
Well, it's a very interesting question, and it's hard to tell exactly whose fault this is. Could be the fault of Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict. Now, I'm saying fault. I don't mean to cast blame. But these are both guys who were university professors before they were popes. And if you work at a university, as I do, you discover that to be a university professor means that you have to train your brain to only speak in the exact, precise, right words. You train your brain that way anyway because you're writing academic material, and then you train your brain that way because you're talking in class and people write down what you say and they take that to be the literal truth, the way you said it. So we were a little bit spoiled in that Pope John Paul II or Pope Benedict, anything they said about the faith was basically true. They almost reached this level of papal infallibility that sometimes people mistake what papal infallibility is. Mm-hmm. Papal infallibility does not mean that everything the Pope says is literally true. Quite the contrary. There's only a few occasions on which a Pope will exercise this papal infallibility, and they're very rare. But with John Paul II and Benedict, since they were trained university professors who were very precise in their speech, you could basically take anything they said to the bank. Well, we quickly learned with Pope Francis that is not the case with him. Now, I remember when it happened for me, it was his very first homily, which was a beautiful homily talking about how we need to be centered on Christ and not just be an NGO that's doing good in the world, but be Christ followers. One line he said in that first homily, though, he said that he who does not profess Jesus Christ professes the worldliness of the devil. All right, so I printed this out, and I walked over to our theology floor here at Benedictine College, and I asked some of the theologians, well, okay, did the Vicar of Christ just say that those who are not Christian are devil worshipers? Because that's what these words mean that came out of his mouth. And they said, no. With Pope Francis, you have to take what, and they immediately recognize this, you have to take what he said and look at it in context and decide and see what he meant. So this hermeneutic, if you will, this way of reading and understanding Pope Francis started with the very first homily that he gave, where you suddenly realize, okay, we're dealing with a pope here who will say things in a hyperbolic way. He'll exaggerate, in other words. He'll say things with an ambiguity that we're not accustomed to. And so you kind of have to parse out what he's trying to say. Now, that's difficult when it's the Holy Father, A, and B, it's difficult when he seems to be so free and easy with the interviews that he gives. So it creates a problem for Catholic journalists, for Catholics in general. So the origin of the book, what Pope Francis really said, was to try to parse out, well, not just parse things out, but put him on record as saying all sorts of things. There's all sorts of things that Pope Francis has said that are very traditional Catholic things, very reassuring to people who want to see the church teaching defended, that we're not hearing from the mainstream media, and we're often not hearing from the Catholic media either. So the book is trying to set the record straight, to not just include the things that the media is picking up that he's saying, but to include the full spectrum of what he's saying.
Yeah, well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the Register and senior contributor for EWTN, and I'm talking with Tom Hoops about the challenges of Catholic media in covering Pope Francis. Well, Tom, you write in your commentary that many Catholics instinctively dislike the Pope's style of casual ambiguity. Those who felt awed and grateful watching Pope John Paul II or reading Pope Benedict XVI often feel a little deflated watching Pope Francis. Feeling underwhelmed by the Pope is understandable. Savaging him in public isn't. That's a pretty important distinction, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and this is basically the distinction that every Catholic needs to recognize about public dissent versus struggles and doubts. We all have struggles and doubts about one teaching or another, the things that we don't fully understand. For many of us, it doesn't cause much pain. You just say, okay, I don't understand it, but the church teaches it, so I'll accept it. Well, that's fine. But if you have a doubt about something like the church's teaching on contraception, then that does not mean that you're a bad Catholic, but it does mean that you should not go and publicly try to cast doubt in other people's minds about that teaching. So what you are sort of do is you struggle silently and you assent publicly, or you don't, or you avoid the topic publicly. For Catholic journalists who make money talking about what's going on with the Pope and in the Vatican, it's hard to figure out exactly how you're supposed to do that. If the Pope is saying something that you think sounds wrong or that you don't fully understand, then what are you supposed to do? And that's sort of an open question. I speak about it kind of forcefully in the article, but with the comments and with further discussion about this topic, it really is a difficult question. Mm-hmm. In fact, here at Benedictine College, we're having a media summit later on in November addressing this question, with John Allen Jr. is coming and Raymond Arroyo is coming and others, to try to figure out, well, how is it that you can be a Catholic and a journalist and be a journalist and be a Catholic? It's a tough question.
Yeah, and that, in fact, anticipates my very next question, that what are the obligations of a Catholic journalist?
Well, ultimately, the obligation of a Catholic journalist is to get the Pope right, okay? Is to actually factually report on what's being said. Often what will happen is the mainstream media will put a spin on what he's saying, and they'll very deliberately try to make his words mean what they want them to mean. And what I've seen far too often is we Catholics take the bait, and some of us who disagree with the media maybe loves what Francis said and or their spin on it, we'll take that and we'll post on Facebook, can you believe he's at it again? Look at what he said now, without ever bothering to check to see what Pope Francis really said. So our basic obligation, first and foremost, is to get Pope Francis right, to actually look up his words, to find out what he really said, and not just take the media's word for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that can be sometimes a frustration, because sometimes Pope Francis will say something on, say, a press conference on board one of the planes, and it does require some additional nuance or explanation. But oftentimes that isn't actually available until, say, the next day. So you have these stories hanging out there.
Yeah, and often you'll see, in research for this book, you'll find that when he says something weird or that's gotten people riled up, that often you'll find 2 or 3 days later he'll kind of walk it back in a new statement. It's a frustrating thing. It is what it is, however. This is who our Pope is, and this is what he's like. Now, I don't mean to say that with great regret and mm-hmm. great disgust, because the more I read Pope Francis, the more I researched this book, actually the more I got to like the guy and got to understand what he's trying to do here. He's playing a different game, if you will, than what we're accustomed to in a kind of new evangelization Catholic circles in the United States. I think the people who are sort of the low-hanging fruit, people who are easy to pick off by evangelization, have all been gotten. He's trying to expand the net a little bit more and see who else he can bring in. So he's doing something new. He's trying to make our church's message reach more people, not by changing the message, but not by changing the content of the message, but by changing the style of the message.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was the last question I really wanted to ask you today, and that was, is this an opportunity for the church, but especially for Catholic media, to help people understand Pope Francis, but especially to understand what he's actually saying?
Absolutely. I think that there's a whole group of people who considered the church irrelevant. They weren't anti-Catholic. They weren't pro-Catholic. They didn't really think much about the Catholic Church at all. It was not on their radar. It's not something that intersected with their life at all. It seemed that the church was just off on questions that they had no interest in, who are now taking a look at our faith and saying, wait a second, they do care about the same things that we care about. Let's listen to what they have to say. There's an opportunity here that the Pope has opened up for us that we'd be silly not to take, because our job as lay followers of Jesus Christ is to make him known to as many people as we can. And the Pope is opening up a golden opportunity for us to do that if we stay on his team and help him out.
Mm-hmm. So what are you working on by way of Pope Francis? Are you going to do a follow-up book?
Well, Raymond Arroyo, I think it was, who said that, well, there'll be no, you can always follow this up with edition after edition after edition as he says new things. I did not choose to become the Pope Francis guy. The opportunity fell in my lap when Servant Books called me. They wanted basically a book about where he stands on several hot button issues, and I agreed to do it. But now I found myself kind of becoming the Pope Francis guy. And it's not where I naturally would have been. But you know what? If the Pope is under attack and if the Church needs defending, you will always see me on the side of the Pope, and you will always see me as the defender of the Pope. So I'm glad that I have this opportunity to back up the Holy Father, try to clarify where it needs to be, and try to point out the things that he's saying that nobody else is pointing out.
Yeah. Well, it's actually not a bad role to have, I think, today.
Well, there's a good history behind folks who've ended up.
There is. Well, Tom, thank you so much for being a guest today, and I look forward to having you back and reading more about what you have to write about Pope Francis.
Great. Thank you very much.
Well, my thanks to Tom Hoops for the gift of his time today. Remember to follow his blog at ncregister.com. In fact, remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining me on Register Radio here on EWTN. For my producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, please take care and God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.